This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending Friday, March the 6th, 2015. Hello and a very warm welcome to you for this week's edition of the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper. We have extracts for you from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending Friday the 6th of March. As ever, Gordon and Liz Legg are our editors. If you have any problems with your recording, do please call Irene Dowding on 01962 870 370. And just a reminder here that you can use the buttons on your box to move on from an item before it finishes or back to any of the tracks you want to listen to again. If you know of anyone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, Irene will help you with that too. Just give her a call and she'll make the necessary arrangements. Her number again is 01962 870 370. 870 370. And another reminder for those of you with computers or tablets. As well as using your memory sticks in the box, you might find it more convenient to access the weekly recording of the Chronicle through our website, www.winchestertalkingnews.com. All lowercase, no spaces. Just go to the website, click on News on the header bar, locate the recording you want to hear, and click Download. The recordings are listed in date order with the most recent first on the list. I'm Ros Lydiard, your presenter, and your readers are Claire Porter.
Hello.
Robin Freeman.
Hello.
And Jerry Tuff.
Hello.
We'll begin as usual with the main headlines, and this week they are Wardens praised after dog rescue, Silver Hill inquiry leads set to be named, anger over parking tickets. And we'll have that first headline story, please, Claire.
Wardens praised after dog rescue, animal welfare officers' pivotal role. Animal wardens who helped rescue a family of dogs abandoned in a shocking state have been praised for their efforts. Welfare officers David Griffiths and May Carrington played a pivotal role in recovering 9 poodle crosses which were cruelly dumped, unable to see or stand, in countryside around Winchester last month. Now they have been recognised for their help by the National Dog Warden Association at a special ceremony with Winchester's mayor. The dogs were deserted near Morstead, Oslebury and Alresford on January the 20th, with thick, matted fur gluing their eyes together and leaving one with a curved spine. Mr. Griffiths said it was the worst incident in his 24 years as an animal welfare officer, while Ms. Carrington tackled the report in just her second week on the job at Winchester City Council. Millions around the world offered their sympathy for the animals. The council was inundated with offers of cash, homes and advice from across Hampshire. Many donation offers were diverted to Poodle Network UK, which has covered veterinary bills of over £5,000. The dogs are recovering in RSPCA centres at Ashley Heath, the Ark at Stubbington and Mount Noddy near Chichester. The owner remains unidentified. Councillor Patricia Stallard, the council's new environment chief, said, "These well-wishers have been so very generous that through their contributions to the charity Poodle Network UK, they have covered nearly £5,000 in vets' bills. I would thank everybody who has contributed and the Poodle Network for their quick and efficient response in administering these donations." The certificates of appreciation were presented by Mayor of Winchester, Councillor Eileen Berry, at her Abbey House residence. Councillor Berry said that the incident had set the standard for care and professionalism in very difficult circumstances.
And Robin will give us that Silver Hill headline.
Silver Hill inquiry leads set to be named. Civic chiefs have accepted a High Court judgment which said they acted unlawfully over the Silver Hill scheme. Winchester City Council will not appeal Mrs. Justice Lang's ruling that it breached European law by keeping the £165 million development from public tender. It was confirmed on Tuesday. But co-developer Henderson could still attempt to reverse the damning decision, which has prompted an independent review into decision-making at the Guildhall. Councillor Frank Pearson, elected leader last month after a string of resignations, hopes to name the inquiry's head by the end of this week, after consulting political group leaders and chairs of key committees. The two candidates, recommended by the Local Government Association, have legal and council experience, but have not worked in Hampshire, Councillor Pearson said. He told the Hampshire Chronicle that investigations could stretch as far back as 1995, when the council first discussed regenerating Silver Hill, but added that he wanted to give as little guidance as possible to avoid accusations of interference. There seems to be a loss of focus in the need for development for finding someone to blame, he added. We mustn't lose the situation that we want that site to be developed. Recriminations of what happened in the past won't much help in that aim. Cabinet debated whether or not to appeal the Silver Hill ruling behind closed doors for almost 2 hours on Tuesday, citing the confidentiality of legal advice. Internal advice to councillors will be published after the appeal deadline if no action is launched. An earlier public session heard how the 2004 decision to enter an agreement with previous developer Thornfield followed common practice at the time. Tim Hellier, council legal adviser and head of planning and environment at Berwyn Leighton Paisner, said, "The council has been extremely cautious, obviously aware that this particular dimension of law is hugely uncertain," he said. "That uncertainty continues up to the point that we're in at the moment. Every single step of the way, the council has gone to the leading chambers in this rather obscure area of law, and the advice that's been given has been implemented." Henderson had until yesterday, Wednesday, to appeal the ruling, but did not respond to the Chronicle's request for comment before it went to press. Councillor Kim Gottlieb, the anti-Silver Hill campaigner who brought the judicial review, has written to the Guildhall warning he will launch a fresh legal offensive if the council tries to go ahead with the scheme approved in December.
Let's have anger over the parking tickets, please, Gerry.
Yes, anger over parking tickets. Residents facing three-figure fines for parking near their Winchester homes have accused a housing association of lining their own pockets after too many permits were issued. A2 Dominion has clamped down with 24-hour restrictions in Peninsula and Erskine Roads, but has allocated more than 60 passes for only 20 spaces, forcing families to park outside bays. Private security guards for contractor PCM have stepped up 6 a.m. patrols to catch residents out with £100 fines. The move has sparked concerns for the isolation of disabled tenants and families who will not be able to have visitors. John Handy of Francis Sheldon Court has been hit with hundreds of pounds in fines over the last fortnight. He was this week stripped of his new permit entirely, meaning friends and family can no longer visit. "If they come, they're going to wind up with a ticket on their car," he said. "I feel really isolated," said Mr. Handy, who is suffering from depression and anxiety. "Why can't they paint more bays?" The streets are a stone's throw from Winchester University, and various measures have been taken in recent years to tackle students stopping over during lectures. Previously, under council ownership, the roads had daytime permit parking and residents would leave their vehicles outside bays to cope with the shortage of spaces. Joanne Smith of Peninsula Road said, "It's just greed, because PCM is 24 hours, 7 days a week, 365 days of the year, including Christmas Day. Where are my family going to park? I can't have them over anymore. I understand they want to stop students parking down here and stop taking residents' places, but we pay our council taxes. All they're interested in is lining their own pockets." The Housing Association is installing 36 new spaces as part of a nearby housing development, but will not provide extra space for current residents. In a letter to families, Nizreen Al-Amar, the estate manager, said, "I would advise you that we will review the situation once again when the building works have been completed. However, due to the demand in this area, it is unlikely that we're going to be in a position to offer additional parking space. Unfortunately, there's no way that we're able to offer parking to satisfy all the residents in the area." Tensions have been stoked by workmen taking some of the remaining spaces. Anna Burridge, A2 Dominion's Assistant Director of Housing, said, "Following reports of vehicles being parked on these roads without permits, we have instructed the company which enforces the permit scheme to increase the number of patrols they carry out and to vary the times at which these patrols take place. We are now monitoring the situation closely and will take further action if required." A2 Dominion is set to consult residents in the coming weeks on whether to allow one or two permits per house, cutting the number of permits to 45 or 32.
Thank you all very much. Mixed bag again this week. Now we're going to have the death notices, and they'll be followed with Claire reading Christian comment. Now the death notices. Borcutt, David Edward Borcutt, peacefully on the 22nd of February, aged 81.
Cox, Vera Lillian Cox, Pat of Durley, on 27th February, aged 87.
Gorman, Peter Darcy Gorman, after fighting a brave battle with cancer in Totland Bay, Isle of Wight, on the 26th of February.
Grant, Ina May Grant, in Flowerdown Care Home, on the 23rd of February, aged 88.
Harmer, Mary Harmer, on the 21st of February, peacefully, aged 91.
Jones, Margaret Thelma Jones, my lovely mum, on Thursday, 26 February, cherished mother of Sarah.
Packer, Frederick George Packer, peacefully at home on the 27th of February, aged 92 years.
Polton, Molly Polton, at home on the 28th of February, aged 84.
Robinson, Tamara Helena Robinson, née Cottam, on the 19th of February in Winchester, aged 96 years.
Tate, David Brian Tate, peacefully after a short illness on 23rd February, aged 71.
Tatham, Philippa Margaret Tatham, suddenly on the 14th of February, aged 33 years.
Wager, Joan Wager, peacefully on 27th of February, aged 84.
Thank you. And Claire. It's contributed by Rowley Ream. Christian comment this week, I think.
It is, indeed. And he has headed it, "The Frightening Power of Big Ideals." People are shocked. They look at the picture of Mohamed Emwazi at his primary school and wonder how such a normal boy could become a brutal serial killer. At secondary level, evidently, he had some anger management issues, but these were overcome through the intervention of teachers. He was proud of his achievements, as were his loving family. Excuse me. We reach for family and education to explain how people turn out, or failing that, to individual character traits. But something else is the driver here. The power of big ideals. The same ideals that took teenage girls from Bethnal Green to Syria turned a young computer programmer into Jihada John. It is to Western Christianity's very great discredit that we find this so hard to grasp. Our version of the faith has become so tame that the English regard it as a private belief, which at best encourages goodness but usually leads to hypocrisy. Christianity, in its original Middle Eastern form, however, encouraged young men to abandon whatever they were doing and their families to become followers of the Master. The Master offered a vision of a new rule, a kingdom that was drawing near, which would overthrow the powerful and promote the downtrodden. Some who followed the Master were put to death because they refused to acknowledge the Emperor's absolute rule. They chose to live outside the system, with uncompromising allegiance to the cause. Giving all your money and possessions to the community was the expectation. The current captivity of Christianity to the social norm explains why passion is being stressed by many church leaders. It seems to provide a way to escape the blandness of so much believing and restore a cutting edge to following Jesus Christ. Even though there are frightening examples to hand of people being misled by ideology, without a passionate cause to stir our spirits, we lapse into niceness. In Lent, we are invited to hear Christ's call again to an uncompromising commitment to the coming rule of God. Anyone who follows will be changed, as radically as those who follow other ideals. We dare to hope, however, that everyone who follows Jesus, in their passion for the coming kingdom of God, will become more like their Master. This should mean more loving, peaceable, and generous service to others. There is nothing to fear from passionate people living out this big kingdom ideal. And that was written by Roland Rehm.
Thank you, Claire. Well, it's a mixed bag in the letters to the editor this week. And I'd like Robin to start us off with the first of eight letters. And Claire will follow the section, finish the section with your say. So off you go, please, Robin.
The first letter this week is from Kate McIntosh of West End Terrace, Winchester, with the title, No Faith in This Pledge of Transparency. At last we have official confirmation of what we have all suspected for so long. Planning consultation is a sham. It came at the Barton Farm Forum meeting when member Helen Osborne asked Steve Tilbury what proportion of respondents had supported the diversion of the Andover Road. The reply came back that the city has no record, and even if it has such a record, it would be immaterial because the decisions are taken by members in committees such as this. Mild murmurs of dissent were heard. It was suggested that members would like to be informed of the results of consultations so that they could decide whether or not to take any account of them. In the light of this now official admission that our carefully worded comments are burned or shredded, what is the point of the public expenditure on the so-called consultations about to commence on station approach? What faith can we put in this newfound pledge of openness and transparency? It seems that widespread cynicism about famed British democracy is well justified. Such a cavalier treatment of public consultation is in contravention of the Gunning principles established in 2001 in the Court of Appeal, Coughlin case, and must underpin every public consultation that takes place in the UK. The Gunning principles are that consultation must take place when the proposal is still at a formative stage. Sufficient reasons must be put forward for the proposal to allow for intelligent consideration and response. Adequate time must be given for consideration and response. The product of consultation must be conscientiously taken into account. Finally, it is important to manage the information resulting from your consultation in an accurate and auditable way. If members have no information on the results of a consultation, it is clear that they cannot take public views into account. These basic principles have passed the test of time and can be seen carried through into all current legislation and guidance, such as the Planning Act 2008 and the Localism Act 2011. The principles have been cited time and again by those who have successfully overturned flawed consultations in the courts. Kate McIntosh, West End Terrace, Winchester.
And a letter on a related topic is headed Keep Topfield as Open Space and comes from Karen McCleary. Last week, the residents of Kingsworthy were kindly invited to a drop-in session run by Winchester City Council, who, it appears, are kindly being gifted Topfield by the current owners, Drew Smith. We were told, it is important the community have their say on what the future of this land may be. What a con. Cynically trying to use WCC as the catalyst and waving the juicy carrot of offering the gift of land for for council houses, Drew Smith are clearly seeking a way of recouping their investment on the land, because it's increasingly clear their planning application for 57 houses on the site is likely to fail. The plans displayed at the drop-in session under a WCC banner for the public to view and comment on were a rerun of Drew Smith's housing plans. The council representative I spoke to in regard to the possibility of keeping Topfield as a publicly owned green space said that was never going to be an option, as funding was not available for anything other than housing. Open space would only be offered as part of a wider housing development. The questionnaire we were asked to complete was heavily skewed towards housing as being the only option. One optimistic question was posed, however. What would you like new public open space to be used for? Perhaps an odd question, given I was told there was no funding to provide public space. To Winchester City Council, therefore, I would like to say that the majority of Kingsworthy residents I know want the following for Topfield. 1. Develop it only as a public open space for everyone to enjoy. Plant woodland and managed hedgerows to maintain a stress-free environment. Encourage flora and fauna to flourish. Let children play. 2. Don't add more concrete and brick to our green and pleasant land. 3. Don't increase the risk of flooding to Springvale by building more houses. 4. Don't increase traffic congestion and pollution with increased housing. 5. Respect the democratic decisions taken in the LPP2 housing plans, which did not support housing on Topfield. Karen McCleary, Hook Pit Farm Lane, Kingsworthy.
Gold Rush in the National Parks, a letter from Colin Palmer. Sir, I read with interest last week's letter from Libby Cleaver about Upham Brewery's planning application to build a new factory on a greenfield site inside the South Downs National Park near Bishop's Waltham. We know that the South Downs Park Authority is overworked and underfunded. This may be the reason why they pass this hot potato to Winchester planners. However, given that one of the two statutory purposes of the SDNP is to conserve and enhance the natural beauty, wildlife and cultural heritage of their areas, we really must ask whether they lack the backbone or the financial resources to take on such a significant application. If so, this sends a very clear message to any potential prospectors, not only in the SDNP, but also the other 9 English parks. You too can transform the status of greenfield land to development land. Let the gold rush begin and leave the national parks to their meaningless platitudes. Colin Palmer, Ashton Close, Bishop's Waltham.
This letter is from Mervyn Edwards of Kingsworthy, with the title Driving a Cart and Horses Through Plans. The government appreciates there is a housing shortfall and have set about resolving this. Each county council has been allocated a target housing building programme. In turn, each council has allocated building targets for each parish. In our case, brackets, Kingsworthy, close brackets, we have a target of 250 new houses in the parish over the next 20 years. The parish council has carried out legal consultation and determined locations for all these houses to honour our target under the auspices of local planning permission, local planning policy 2. Over the last few years in the Winchester area, developers have purchased land assuming that they have a right to build houses on it. Pressures are put on the City Council until they wear their way through to getting planning permission, irrespective of the requirements of LPP 2. It seems that the City Council's Planning Committee has the right to overrule the planning officers and the views of parish councils. This seems to fly in the face of overall strategic planning. At any significant development, the developer is required to build a certain percentage of affordable houses. There have been at least two cases in Winchester recently where the city's planning committee has overridden this requirement. I am thinking in particular of the Silver Hill development and the redevelopment of the old fire station site. In each case, the developer has been let off the requirement to build a proportion of affordable houses, even though they were originally included in the plans. The argument by the developer is that it is not cost effective to build such houses. One could argue that this is transferring the less well off from the city centre to the surrounding villages to the detriment of the city centre. There are now moves afoot to transfer this city's shortfall to surrounding villages by declaring a rural exception site and taking over land outside the LPP2 plans to build affordable or council houses. Inevitably, this eats up essential recreational green space in the villages. What is the point of a carefully thought-out strategic plan if developers can drive a cart and horses through it? Mervyn Edwards, Ilex Close, Kingsworthy.
This letter comes from Douglas Patterson, who's the chairman of Keep Hampshire Green, and he says, probing questions to be answered. The principal of Sparshalk College would like to erect a 240-foot wind turbine. The planning committee will decide this today. He would like to follow this up with a massive biodigester covering 11 acres, which is 166 tennis courts or 7.3 football pitches. I hope the planning committee will ask very probing questions about the environmental footprints of these two developments. For example, the fuel for the biodigester is to be grass, really, which we are told will only require 4% of the agricultural land within a 15-mile radius. I make that 18,079 acres. After subtracting urban areas, that is enough for 16,600 trailer loads of silage converging on Sparshalt through the summer. Is that correct? And how much digestate needs transporting back out? The wind turbine is what is under discussion this week. The proposed Enercon E48 has a potential 800 kilowatt maximum power, but the application reveals that this one will be deliberately restricted down to 500 kilowatts. This fiddle of the subsidy system turns a £95,000 a year subsidy into £175,000, not illegal, but not ethical either. If it supplied the claimed 300 households, in reality it will be just a fraction of this, The subsidy would be about £580 per household supplied per year. Agricultural students might like to compare that with the much criticised farming subsidies, which by my calculation work out at about £8.25 per household supplied, with milk, bread, beef and beer. So the wind subsidy is 70 times the agricultural subsidy. Concerning financial gain, does the college have £1.5 million to speculate on a wind turbine and many more millions on an AD plant? Or is it an outside investor developer who will be creaming off the benefits? There is an educational value to this exercise. It provides an example in microcosm of the devastating impact on the countryside of a flawed EU policy driven by ideology, naivety and profit, and which we already know has dismally failed to reduce carbon emissions across Europe. Douglas Paterson, Chairman of Keep Hampshire Green, Hunton Grange Farm, Sutton Scotney.
This letter is headed, "I've got a bus pass, but no buses." What is the point of a bus pass if there are no buses, or they run at times which are of no use? Under the proposals by Hampshire County Council to change our bus passes to a 9:30 a.m. start, like many others who live in rural areas with only occasional buses, we will not be able to get into Winchester or Southampton until after 11 o'clock, making it impossible for a morning appointment at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital, and even more difficult if one has to attend Southampton General. With an afternoon appointment, one will not be sure of getting a bus home. Recognising that there is no such thing as a free bus pass, why cannot pensioners make a nominal payment when they travel? This would mean that the bus company gets more funding and pensioners get a useful, timely service. Surely it is better to contribute towards the cost of a bus service than have no buses or a service which cannot meet the needs of those to whom it is essential. If the bus services are non-existent in even more rural areas and the bus times do not meet the needs of pensioners, then this will lead to more car usage. Just what Winchester and Southampton need. Crawford Wright, Chapel Road, Swanmore.
This letter is from Philip Windsor Aubrey of Hairstock and has the heading "Discourage people from littering verges." I recently had occasion to drive along the A34 in both directions. The verges resembled a very long-standing rubbish dump. They were unbelievably filthy, and compared to the Berkshire section, by no means perfect, a disgrace. Littering roadside verges in Hampshire has long been a problem, with apparently little effort by the responsible authorities to either forcibly discourage it or also clean up. Somebody's job should be put on the line. In the USA, the verges are compared to ours, very clean indeed. The verges are signed to the effect that discarding trash is a federal offence rather than a state offence, and therefore to be respected. May I both ask that something is done about it and that people are legally discouraged from despoiling the countryside? Philip Windsor Aubrey, Lovett Walk, Hairstock.
"Stand up for all minorities," says Danny Hable. I read with sadness Mrs. Pinch's recent response to my letter calling for support for people, particularly Christians, who are suffering persecution in the Middle East and North Africa. I had hoped we would be united in our concern for the peoples of that region. Instead, she chooses to condemn Israel. Surely it is more important for an active Christian such as her to campaign for the survival of Christianity where its very existence is threatened. The Middle East and North Africa is a massive area of violence and oppression with one stable democracy in its midst. Israel is not a perfect country, but its record on human rights, rule of law, freedom of speech and freedom to worship is many levels above that of the countries around it. That is why it is the only country in the region whose Christian population has increased and is still increasing. To condemn one country alone is to ignore the suffering of tens of millions of others, especially when that country is one of the smallest in size and numbers and is the most considerate to its minorities. But this is a distraction from the main subject of my first letter. We should all be raising our voices about the denial of security, safety, and freedom of worship to minorities right across the world. Danny Habel, Beer Close, Winchester.
Thank you for those. And now it's Claire with the Your Say section of the Hampshire Chronicle. I think the subject is about the plans to scrap the TV licence fee and charge a broadcasting levy instead.
Yes, that's it. And Sally Humphreys, who's 51, was asked, and she's a landlady of Alsford Road, Winchester. And she said, I can't quite see how it is going to work, but I think it's not working, and perhaps a levy is a fairer system to have. At the moment, people use the internet without paying a licence. Leonard Symes, who's 83 and retired of Lower Brook Street, Winchester, said, At my age, I get a free TV licence, but does this mean that I will have to pay the levy? Is it a way of the government getting round giving free licences to retired people? I suspect political chicanery. Sarah Webber, who's 28, a pub assistant manager at Hyde Close Hyde, said, I think it is effective because it pays for the TV channels, but to make everyone pay is not fair because not everyone has a TV. And Greg Player, who's 41, a security consultant of Upper Brook Street, said, It depends on the administration and whether it will cost more to do. I'm not so sure that we should have a state-supported broadcaster anymore, and realistically, I don't believe in its impartiality.
Thank you, Claire. Now, if you have an opinion or a subject you'd like to air in the Hampshire Chronicle, you can contact them on 01962 860 836. That's 01962 860 836. Or you could email news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk. That's all lowercase, no spaces, news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk. Or you could also write to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. Now we go on to the editor's opinion in editorial comment after his readers' opinions. And it's headed this week, A Better Plan Might Emerge for Silver Hill. So, Winchester City Council decided on Tuesday against appealing the High Court judgment that it acted unlawfully over aspects of the procurement process, for Silver Hill. That is a sensible decision by a cash-strapped authority tasked with the prudent use of taxpayers' money. This may all be academic, as the developer TIAA Henderson Real Estate had until 4 p.m. yesterday, after the Chronicle went to press, to appeal. There is now an opportunity for the council to reconsider whether the current scheme is still the best for the city. The council may say that the issue of procurement is unrelated to the merits of the current scheme. Others, and this newspaper is increasingly minded to agree, say the huge scheme of flats, houses and parking emerged precisely because of the restricted nature of the tendering. Had Silver Hill been open to tendering both in 2004 and when Henderson's took it over, a better plan might have emerged. Now is the chance to find out. And another small item from the editor. Winchester's first Pride Parade for lesbian, gay, bisexual and transgender people was held last week. It was good to see. But next time, hold it on a weekend when the vast majority of the population can support it. Right, Joanna Lewis has contributed first person this week, and Jerry is going to be her voice.
And again, it's to do with planning. 50 Shades of Grey. I came across it a few weeks ago, but the memory still haunts me. Lacking experience in this area, I found it slightly disturbing. I am, of course, referring to the site of Winchester City Council's planning committee. A group of us had taken time off work to support our neighbourhood campaign against a garden grab development. It was futile. We came away feeling a bit like the book's female lead. We'd been trussed up like a plucked chicken. Winchester is now famous for two things: the oldest high street in Europe, and one of the most embarrassing councils in the country, thanks to this disgraceful behaviour over Silver Hill. Yes, there have been a couple of high-profile resignations, plus pledges to listen. But Silver Hill is just one example of what many communities have fallen foul of when voicing sensible objections to inappropriate building development. For real progress, the institutional culture around the planning committee needs fundamental reform. From where I was sitting that day, the assembled gathering looked like an extension of the Jurassic Coast. The last time I saw such a lack of alertness in something with a pulse, it was my friend's tortoise Eric coming out of hibernation. Huge obstacles still stand in the way of Winchester having a council that will exercise some building control on a par with other historic cities like Bath and be far less submissive to the property development industry. In addition to a local MP that prioritises this, we need a planning committee of councillors who live in the area and not in villages outside. Removed from the practical implications of their decisions, cocooned in picture postcard Merry England hamlets, too many view the town through the lens of their pension pot buy-to-lets. Secondly, we need an independent body to supervise the planning application process. The Sunday Times pointed out the fundamental flaw in Henderson's Silver Hill dystopia. The council was in effect a co-developer due to the lure of financial gain. In our case, the cosy relationship between developer, architect and council was tighter than a pair of Kylie's hot pants. Some councillors bent so far backwards to present the scheme positively, they were doing a limbo dance. The computer-generated images were misleading. Well, one presentation deserved to be on the Man Booker shortlist for best fiction. Surely all controversial schemes should be required to produce a scaled model of the building and buildings around it. Henderson had a model of Silver Hill at its London HQ, but the public never saw one. Finally, the public should be given more time to object at meetings. You are allowed 3 minutes to put forward your case. It's intimidating and unfair. It doesn't matter that you can't hear us, snarled one councillor when a neighbour shouted we couldn't hear him. He'd forgotten to switch his microphone on. Thus, the charade of listening to the public was complete. Oh, incidentally, it was the new leader of the council who said that.
An entertaining writer, appropriately read. Thank you very much, Tony. And alternative news from Belgarum. And we've got four items this week, and I'll start off with the first one, which is about noisy bin men in Winchester. It's headed, "Bin Men Disturb Hungover Student." A moment's thought for the partying students of Winchester. Amid growing complaints of late-night noise from families in Stanmore and Winnell, one Winchester University scholar has taken to Facebook to point out that noise affects them too. But it wasn't drunken antics which bothered them, it was bin men. One reveller with a sore head took to the Winchester Confession Facebook page last Wednesday to complain about waste collectors disturbing their hangover. I would appreciate kindly if the uni would stop having loud vehicles around the Burma area first thing in the morning, the anonymous user said. I'm sure I'm not the only one who doesn't want to hear loud beeping and engines at 6:30 in the morning after a night at the popular student union event BOP. And if that wasn't enough, they said a massive bin collecting vehicle at 8 a.m. too, just in case not everyone was woken up the first time. Seriously, Winchester, sort it out. Residents will be pleased to know that the vast majority of students mocked his complaint politely, pointing out that bin collection is done by council outsourcers in overalls, not scholars in academic robes. And the next Belgarum item comes from Claire, please.
The statistics that schools love to dismiss. Belgarum knows that there are lies, damned lies, and statistics, but this time of year sees the annual surrender to looking at the details of Oxbridge Brown students from Peter Simmons College. The college helpfully provides a list of students and the secondary schools they attended. The schools will deny they take too much interest, so to save them the trouble, here's the breakdown. King's, 10 students. The Westgate, 4. Henry Beaufort, 2. Perrins, 1. And Swanmore, 1.
Demolition of old fire station almost complete. The demolition of the former Winchester Fire Station on North Walls is all but complete. Belgarum was sad to see it go, the base for firefighters in the city until the mid-1930s, until the opening of the new station on Eastern Lane about 3 years ago. The structure has been dismantled piece by piece, almost gently, as salvagers look to reuse the bricks and roof tiles and many internal fittings. And the piece is illustrated by a rather desolate-looking scene where the fire station is half demolished.
Which name came first and what led to change? Winchester is full of historical glitches and quirks, but the one that's always intrigued Belgarum is on St Giles Hill. Why is there a medieval house called the Old Blue Boar, presumably once a public house, while next to it is Blue Ball Hill, the road that runs down to Water Lane? Which came first, and why was there a change? Some medieval road names have been changed over the centuries because, to put it mildly, they would now be considered indecent. But the evolution of Blue Boar to Blue Ball would appear to have no reason. Belgarum would love to know if there is one.
Thank you very much, everyone. And we're on to historical items now, although this 200 years one I could call hysterical item. It's 200 years ago, March the 6th, 1815. Scholars abuse holiday grace. Monday, being St David's Day, the Westminster scholars had a holiday. This grace was abused by some of them, who after drinking to excess became so infuriated that they attacked almost every person they met. The whole neighbourhood was thrown into the greatest consternation, and a scene of tumult and confusion ensued. And the second 200 years ago item. Monday evening, as Mr Spence, mate of an East Country trader lying off Limehouse, was returning from Mile End between the hours of 11 and 12. He was accosted by two fellows in Stepney Fields armed with bludgeons, who demanded his money. Mr Spence resolutely resisted their demands and, being prepared with a tuck stick, kept them at bay for some minutes. When one of them attempted a blow at his head, this he warded off and at the same time pricked the fellow in the arm, who immediately dropped the bludgeon on the ground, and both villains made a hasty retreat without effecting the robbery.
100 years ago, March the 6th, 1915. Guildhall Concert. There was an extremely large attendance at the concert at the Guildhall on Sunday evening. The new arrangements by which the public were admitted to the gallery at an increased charge, threepence per person, proved eminently successful and led to no diminution in the numbers present. There was again an excellent programme. The vocalists were Miss Christmas Anderson, Mr. Gregory Stroud, and Mr. Walter Adams. We have previously spoken of the refined and clever singing of Miss Anderson. The two gentlemen came from London, where they have a reputation which they upheld here to the full. And a second item. At the recent annual general meeting of the Winchester and District Agricultural Association, it was decided to form a heavy horse society and to obtain a heavy-built Clydesdale horse for the district. The proposed society would, of course, be an entirely distinct organisation, but if these societies are formed, and there happens to be an agricultural association or club already existing, the Board of Agriculture always advise that the association or club would be a desirable nucleus for which to start the new society. In order to further the proposal, a meeting was held at the Castle, Winchester, on Saturday afternoon.
There are also two items from 50 years ago, March the 6th, 1965. The first one is Skittles Challenge. Members from the Chandler's Ford and Totten Young Conservatives were not put off by the weather on Wednesday evening when they proceeded to the Star Hotel at East Titherley for a Skittles Challenge. Although gale force winds were prevalent and the snow was piling high outside, the match continued to the very end and was eventually won by Totten Branch. The match proved so successful that it was decided that come rain or shine, a further match will be played again in the very near future. And the second item, there was a full house at the Furnival Hotel Cadnam on Monday week, when over 700 local farmers attended a film show and discussion organised by SCATS in conjunction with the Ministry of Agriculture. The theme of the meeting was Safety on the Farm, and to open the proceedings, Mr. J. Fawcett, SCATS director, emphasised the importance of machinery protection in this modern age of farm mechanisation. He then introduced Mr. R. A. Bristow, the Ministry's Divisional Safety Inspector, who showed a series of slides illustrating the recommended safety devices. The Ministry's film, Safety on the Farm, Taking a Chance, was then shown.
25 years ago, March the 20th, 1990, attracting visitors to the Watercress Line. The Watercress Line could be more successful than it is, says the Steam Railway's newly appointed marketing agent. Wagner Communications of Farnham is aiming to increase the number of visitors to the line by 30%. The railway, which runs between Alresford and Alton, caters for some 85,000 visitors each summer, yet has great potential for expansion in the opinion of Mr. Stuart Wagner, the company's managing director. We are convinced that a lack of awareness in its main catchment area is the major problem for the line. And the second paragraph, Mr. Paul Phillips of Ratcliffe Orchids, Ossulbury, proved that small is beautiful at the Westminster Flower Show, the second of the year last week. 2 years ago, he and his wife Mary, née Ratcliffe, who are proprietors of the firm, were running an orchid business with 19 employees at Chiltern, Oxfordshire, which was high and cold. Paphiopedilum were their favourite orchids, and they decided to concentrate on those and do the work by themselves. After looking at many sites, they decided on Ossulbury, which had a house and an untouched paddock. They sold their surplus orchids to America and Japan and moved to Hampshire.
Thank you all very much for those. And those were our weekly regular features. And we're going to take a look now at what's on in the region over the next couple of weeks or so. We're fast approaching spring, so let's start with an open garden. And this one is on Sunday, March the 15th, and it's at Little Court, Crawley, near Winchester. It's a small and pretty village with a traditional walled country garden which is spectacular in the spring, with countless bulbs and many rustic seats throughout. and that's opened at 2 p.m. until 5 p.m. And admission is £4. Plants are for sale, and they sell teas. Workshops, and oh, and this is a good one. On Saturday, March the 14th, there is a walking tall workshop at 1:30 p.m. You have nothing to lose except your hunched shoulders and aches and pains. It's free, it says. Drop in. I might. That was a very good one. And, of course, theatre. We always try to bring some theatre into your lives. This one is the Swansea City Opera is bringing Faust to Winchester Theatre Royal. And I'm going to read you the preview item. Its headed Gothic tale follows Fortunes of Faust. One of the great works of European literature has been transformed into a new opera by Swansea City Opera for their 10th anniversary tour. This production of Faust is a rare opportunity to see Gounod's finest work sung in English. The Gothic tale follows the fortunes of Faust, who, weary of life, is contemplating suicide when he encounters Mephistopheles, the devil. Faust agrees to exchange his soul for eternal youth and the fulfilment of his hedonistic wishes. The resulting journey balances romance and temptation and is widely regarded as a magical and tuneful masterpiece based on Goethe's dramatic poem of the same name. This production is set in the Victorian Gothic era and accompanied by chamber orchestra. It contains many well-known musical highlights, including the Jewel Song and the Soldiers' Chorus, which will be performed by some of the finest singers and orchestral players in the country. It follows on from Swansea City Opera's highly acclaimed 2014 production of The Marriage of Figaro. And this is the details of the production. It's at the Winchester Theatre Royal, as I said, and it's on Friday, March the 13th at 7:30 p.m. The tickets cost £23. And to book, call the box office on 01 962 840 440. That's 01962 840 440, or go online at theatreroyalwinchester.co.uk. All lowercase, no spaces. theatreroyalwinchester.co.uk. And more theatre in the area. Theatre Royal again has the History Boys coming, and that's from March the 7th, that will be today, but it goes through to Wednesday, where there's a matinee, and next Saturday, and there's also a matinee. So that's a week of it. That's Winchester, box office 01962 840 440 from Saturday, March the 7th. The Chesil Theatre, Winchester, is staging a production by Martin McDonagh called The Beauty Queen of Lenan, a dark story with a lot of humour and an interesting tale to tell. And that starts on Saturday, March the 21st, and goes through to the 28th of March, with a matinee on the 28th, evening performances at 7:45. You can book tickets on the number 07527 471 539. And that's through the website, www.chesiltheatre.org.uk. All lowercase, no spaces. The Plaza Theatre in Romsey is staging Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat. And that's Wednesday to Saturday, March the 11th to the 14th at 7:30 p.m. with a matinee on the Saturday at 2:30. It's a lovely musical and really well worth seeing. The website for the Plaza Theatre is, Plaza Theatre's tickets, I'm sorry, is www.ticketsource.co.uk/Plaza Theatre. All lowercase, I'll say it again, www.ticketsource.co.uk/Plaza Theatre. Mayflower Southampton's got a lovely programme coming up, and starting with Edward Scissorhands, and then there's that will be finished by tomorrow evening, March the 7th, when you receive this. Fascinating Aida is called Charm Offensive, very funny group, Wednesday 11th of March. I'm Sorry I Haven't a Clue on Monday, March the 16th. and To Kill a Mockingbird on Tuesday to Saturday, March the 17th to the 21st. All more details from that at the Mayflower Theatre, Southampton on 02380 711811. 02380 711811. Nuffield Theatre has a production which may be for children but with adults too, on how the koala bear learned to hug. Also The Head That Wears the Crown and Shapi Korsandi. All of those details can be had from box office 02380 671771. That's the Nuffield Theatre's programme. Salisbury Playhouse are showing All My Sons, and that's on a week from tomorrow, 7:30pm and 2:50am matinees on Thursday and Saturday. That number and your last box office number is 01722 320 333. 01722 320 333. And finally, before the general news, here we have the lighting up time starting on Saturday the 7th of March. The sun will set at 5:56pm, and on Wednesday the 11th of March the sun will rise at 6:29am, with a lighting up time on that day at 6:03pm. And so on to the general news, with Gerry starting us off, please.
Council housing plan for Top Field. And of course this goes back to a letter I read earlier on. New council housing could be built in a village on a site where residents have been campaigning against development. The City Council is considering whether to bring land off Hookpit Farm Lane in Kingsworthy, known locally as Top Field, into public ownership to secure its future. A packed public consultation last week saw information boards displayed which suggested uses for the area, currently owned by developer Drew Smith. The boards asked whether it could be used for a unique opportunity for local leadership, putting local people, councillors, the parish council, at the heart of this future. Council housing with priority for local people, public-owned open space, or community facilities. The Parish Council recently voted to support building off Loveton Lane as part of Local Plan Part 2, rejecting ideas for Top Field. Some residents are now angry about the Council's potential plans, calling it a backdoor development. Karen McCleary, Vice Chair of Top Field Action Group, which campaigned against a previous planning application for 57 homes there, said she got the impression the council did not want to hear the residents' views. There were a lot of very angry people there, she said. Winchester has St Catherine's Hill, and no one would dream of building there. So why can't Topfield in Kingsworthy be something similar? We are short of open space. A council spokesman said there is currently a need for 115 council houses for people with a local connection to Kingsworthy, but it is not known how many houses could be built if the ideas go ahead. That will be based on a detailed analysis of site opportunities and constraints, he said. The City Council listened to views on the preferred site for LPP2, hence Loveton Lane. We will listen to views about Hookpit. The land is deemed a rural exception site, which means without public support, development cannot go ahead. Housing portfolio holder Councillor Steve Miller said, after the public consultation, we will look at the comments, and if there's a desire to go ahead, we will talk to Drew Smith to see if there's an opportunity to come up with something that meets residents and Drew Smith's wishes. We are consulting the public to see how they feel. If the public don't want it, it won't happen. There are a lot of people that want social housing. Parish Council Vice Chairman Martin Taylor said the consultation was well attended by a wide selection of residents and the council is not changing its stance. The Parish Council had considered the site as part of Local Plan Part 2, and we didn't choose it, and at the moment that remains our position, he said. When Drew Smith had put in an application, the Parish Council's Planning Committee unanimously decided to object. Drew Smith's director, Phil Farminer, said the company has presented the council the opportunity to secure the site for some new housing and wider community benefits. He said, "Drew Smith is pleased that Winchester City Council is discussing the proposal with local people and that it is listening to their views in relation to the needs and aspirations of the local community. To have your say, go to winchester.gov.uk/housing and fill in the questionnaire. The closing date is March the 9th.
Cathedral considers giving falcons a nest. A pair of deadly predators could take a new perch on Winchester's holiest building this year when their nest on a police tower block is bulldozed. Winchester Cathedral is one of two homes being considered for two peregrine falcons, which currently live on Hampshire Constabulary's headquarters in Romsey Road. The West Hill base, sold last year to housing developers, is one of four city buildings high enough to be a suitable habitat, along with Winchester Prison, the Cathedral, and the Royal Hampshire County Hospital. But the prison has proved unworkable, according to Keith Betton, Hampshire County Recorder for Birds. "If you go in that prison, it's actually, first of all, quite a bit lower than you think," he said. "The other thing is that prisoners get regular exercise, and there are people milling around all the time. From that point of view, it's too busy for the birds." He added that the hospital would also be too busy for the falcons. Peregrines, which nest on high-rise buildings when tall trees are unavailable, are believed to be the fastest creatures on earth and can reach speeds of over 200 miles per hour when diving for prey. They have used the Norman Cathedral for centuries to rest and launch hunts for pigeons, but this would be the first time they could enjoy a man-made nest on the roof. Cathedral bosses are yet to decide whether to take the birds in. Contractors are set to demolish this former police tower block this autumn after the birds have nested in summer. Strict conservation laws prevent them from being disturbed during nesting. The prolific killers were culled during the Second World War to protect carrier pigeons, which were used to deliver messages to European sleeper agents, but have returned to Hampshire over the last 20 years. There are currently 16 peregrine nests in Hampshire, the highest number since their return to breeding in the county in 1993. Work on Barclay Homes project is set to begin in January 2016 if plans are permitted, and the article is illustrated by a picture of a peregrine falcon just landing on a church tower which looks rather like St Thomas's.
Surgeries rated good by CQC. Two doctors' surgeries have been rated as good by health inspectors. Reports published by the Care Quality Commission, CQC, say that Westmeon Surgery in Westmeon and Friarsgate Practice in Wick are both rated good in categories such as safe, effective and responsive. Inspectors visited Westmeon Surgery last November the 6th, and the resulting report published last month said the practice was above the national average for the proportion of respondents to the GP patient survey who stated that they always or almost always saw or spoke to the GP they preferred. It also found that patients were complimentary about the service, staff are committed, and it is also above average for the percentage of patients who gave a positive answer to accessing the GP practice by phone. In a similar report, also published last month, inspectors said Friarsgate is safe, responsive, caring, effective and well-led. It said We found the practice provided good care to older people, people with long-term conditions, people in vulnerable circumstances, families, children and young people, working-age people and people experiencing poor mental health.
For God's sake, it's a case of only fools and horses. Houses. Only fools and houses, in fact. He's remembered as the slick Rick with a wicked laugh and dodgy car deals. But for one housing developer, it doesn't matter if he's a much-loved character from one of British most popular sitcoms. Carla Homes, which is building new homes in Park Road in Winchester, told residents that the residents' suggested name for the site, Voicy, sounds too similar to Boise of Only Fools and Horses. The developer had wanted to name it Clarendon Court after the 24-mile historic way linking Winchester with Salisbury. However, on the same day as inquiries were made by the Hampshire Chronicle to the City Council and the actor himself, John Challice, it was announced that the name Voicy Court had been approved after all. The decision was made by ward councillors Dominic Hiscox, Sue Nelms and Jim Maynard. Resident Chris Seeley, 73, retired, criticised Carla Homes for the ridiculous association and said, quite frankly, no one's going to make that connection. He said locals suggested naming the development after well-known 20th century architect and designer Charles Voicy. He lived out his final days in nearby Park House, a care home in Park Road, which closed in 2009. He died in 1941. Mr. Seeley said he's delighted that the councillors listen to local residents. It's right that significant figures from our cultural history like Charles Voicy are acknowledged in this way, he said. I hope the Carla Homes will see this as lending distinction to their development, and I can assure them that it's been a long time since anyone has seen a yellow Reliant Robin in these parts. John Challice, the actor who played Boise, on hearing about the spat, said, "For God's sake, tell them to stop being so bloody stupid. Voicy's a well-respected name in the area and a perfect choice. Anyway, how dare the developers insinuate that Boicy's name denotes any sense of nefariousness? I find it very offensive that my name should be tarnished in this way. I demand an apology." When the Chronicle told him the name Voicy Court had been approved, he said, "Well, I'm delighted that common sense has prevailed. Me and Marlene have been dreaming of a housing development called Boicy Meadows." A spokeswoman for Carla Homes said Clarendon Court was the chosen marketing name for the development, but it was down to the council to decide on the postal address. When asked about the Boicy comments, she added, "Any comment that may have been made by an individual certainly does not reflect the views of Carla Homes, and we apologise for any offence this may have caused." She said the company is happy with the selected name.
Cathedral in pledge to pay its workers the living wage. Winchester Cathedral has pledged that its staff will receive a significant pay increase after claims jobs are paying below the living wage. It comes amid revelations that jobs in the Church of England are paying below £7.85 an hour, the living wage outside London. An allegation has been made that some cathedral jobs pay as low as £6.60 an hour to staff aged 18 and over, nearly £10 below the city's hourly average wage of £16.22. Last week, the Archbishop of Canterbury, Justin Welby, admitted the revelations were embarrassing, but said the church had made clear the move towards the living wage was a gradual process which would inevitably take some time. Referring to a pastoral letter issued to parishes last week by the church's House of Bishops, he said, "We talked about the need to move towards that, and the Archbishop of York, John Sentamu, carefully said that we need to move towards paying the living wage." He added, "It's embarrassing, of course, I won't say otherwise. But in the light of transparency, which I welcome, I will say we are a complex institution and every parish church and cathedral is an independent charity, as is every diocese. Simon Barwood, Media and Communications Officer at Winchester Cathedral, confirmed the cathedral would address the issue during this year's pay review. Winchester Cathedral is fully committed to moving towards paying all staff the living wage, and as part of the 2015 pay review have begun to address this, he said. This year, therefore, a significant increase in pay will be awarded to those staff who are below the living wage threshold. The Archbishop added that change to a living wage would come gradually because each of the independent charities lacked the resources to move more quickly. We don't have a centralised method of control, he said. I'm not very keen on centralised control, where from far away you tell people what to do. As a charity, they have to do that gradually. You'll see that, and you'll see the accusations of hypocrisy, but make up your own mind as to what it is.
Businessman insists his £1.2 million offer is a rescue deal for store. A businessman who is on course to become the owner of a chain of department stores, including one in the Brooks Centre in Winchester, has insisted, "I'm not an asset stripper." Andrew Perloff spoke to the Chronicle after the board of Beals, which has a store in Winchester, agreed his £1.2 million offer for the business, despite branding it disappointing. "I do like real assets, but I'm in it to improve the trading situation," he said. The announcement that the board had agreed Mr. Perloff's bid prompted fears for the future of the business as it is now. But Mr. Perloff, a property magnate and UKIP donor, said his offer was a rescue deal for the company. He insisted he would not be laying waste to the department store chain. "We're going to do a review of the whole business when we get in full control," he said. "We've seen the management's existing plan, and we're going to partially work on that and have a look to see which stores may be unviable. I think it's very few. It may be that one or two out of 29 are not viable. We don't know the number. It may be that there are none we have to look at." The offer to shareholders from Mr. Perloff's company, English Rose, last month was for 6p a share, 48% less than they were trading for the previous Friday. Although the deal was described as cut price, Mr. Perloff points out that he has spent millions to get to this point. He and his family control almost 30% of the equity. And alongside, there's a photograph of Mr. Perloff and also a snap of Beale's department store in Winchester.
Well, here's another item about another shop. An empty shop in Winchester High Street is set to reopen after 2 years of neglect. The former JJB sports branch is poised for a relaunch by clothing chain White Stuff this summer after a string of failed takeover deals from other firms. The premium retail space has become an eyesore since closing in 2013, with legal wrangles and refurbishment costs blocking a successful takeover. JJB collapsed in 2012, but the Winchester branch continued as a cheap outlet for several months after Sports Direct bought its stock. White Stuff is expected to relocate from nearby Market Lane in time for the summer tourism boom. It comes after two restaurant chains pulled out of launches. Confirming the agreement, Chris Turner, director of Winchester BID, added that the cost of refurbishing Winchester's historic buildings surprised traders who expected a quick opening. "This is not small money," he said. "I think some of those companies look at the buildings and think, this is going to be gorgeous, then realise. They need to be people with a reasonable capital investment strategy and money to put into it. Heritage people in the city are very demanding." Recent refurbishments in Winchester city centre have cost up to £1 million. A White Stuff spokesman said, "Unfortunately, we cannot comment on the Winchester relocation at this time. Information on the shop is not yet readily available."
Soldiers' bravery is rewarded with VC. Lance Corporal risked his life to save others. A Hampshire soldier who risked his life to save others on the front line in Afghanistan has been recognised with the highest honour in the military. Lance Corporal Joshua Leakey will become the second member of his family to receive the Victoria Cross in almost 70 years. The 27-year-old is only the 15th serviceman to receive the VC since the Second World War. He is also the third serviceman to receive the VC for servicing in Afghanistan, and the only one not to receive it posthumously. Lance Corporal Leakey will receive his medal for the role he played during a combined UK-US assault on a Taliban stronghold in August 2013. The one paraman was said to have shown complete disregard for his own safety as the group came under attack from around 20 insurgents armed with machine guns and rocket-propelled grenades in Helmand province. He ran through enemy fire to the top of a barren hill, gave first aid to a wounded US Marine Corps captain, and helped casualties escape. He took control of a machine gun that had been surrounded by enemy fighters as bullets ricocheted off it and helped Allied teams to regain the initiative. During the battle, 11 insurgents were killed and 4 wounded. Lance Corporal Leakey, who joined One Para in 2007, said he was deeply honoured, but insisted that the award was for everyone in his regiment and battalion. He said, "This award is brilliant, but it's also something I'm accepting on behalf of my regiment and my battalion, of which I'm so proud. You don't really think what could happen to yourself. You think, how is what I'm doing now going to improve the situation? It's part of the very nature of being in the army, and especially in the parachute regiment, that we have to adapt to situations you don't expect to happen. I'm lucky. I'm here. I've got all my limbs, my health, I've got my friends and my family. In my mind, the biggest fear is letting the side down, letting your regiment down, and not doing your cap badge proud." His second cousin, twice removed, Sergeant Nigel Gray Leakey, was awarded the VC in November 1945 after fighting in Africa with the King's African Rifles during the Second World War. The honour was bestowed posthumously for magnificent fighting spirit facing almost certain death during a battle against Italian opposition at Colito in Abyssinia, now Ethiopia, on May 19, 1941. The confusion and loss of armour that Sergeant Leakey caused was described as critical to the Italian defeat in the battle. Although the Kenyan soldier has no known grave, he is commemorated on the East Africa Memorial near Nairobi.
Discovery Centre's Light Boost. One of Winchester's main galleries has been boosted by a 5-figure government and charity grant. New lighting worth £25,000 is to be installed in the Discovery Centre in Jury Street. The new LED system, to be installed later this year, will allow visitors to see displays much better and protect the world-class objects on show by emitting less heat. Janet Owen, Chief Executive of Hampshire Cultural Trust, said, "In order to bring world-class culture to Hampshire, we need to have the right environment to display it in. This latest funding boost will allow us to do just that and hopefully attract even more world-class touring exhibitions and loans from national collections." Winchester Discovery Centre is one of 25 venues across the UK to benefit from such a grant. Jointly funded by the Department for Culture, Media and Sport and the Wolfson Foundation, the £3 million pot is designed to fund renovation and improvement projects in museums and galleries to increase access and enhance the display of exhibits. The £7 million centre opened in 2007.
Why zebras? Marwell has chosen a Grevy's zebra sculpture to highlight the plight of the species in the wild. For two decades, Marwell Wildlife has been working with partners in northern Kenya to conserve wildlife in the area. There are fewer than 3,000 Grevy's zebra left in the world. James Cretney, Marwell Wildlife's chief executive, said, "All proceeds from Marwell's Zany Zebras charity fundraising auction will help support our long-term work with Grevy's zebra in Africa. This large and striking animal shares the landscape with many other species, including elephant and large carnivores, all living alongside economically marginalised farming communities, another area of interest for Marwell. Grevy's zebra are in crisis and represent a flagship species for us. Marwell Wildlife works with partners in northern Kenya to conserve nature and support people who depend on the environment. So not only will Marwell's Zany Zebras bring joy to the city of Southampton, but will also support Marwell's overarching charitable work." And there's a photograph of a very smart black and white zebra.
Fruit Trees Scheme Scuppered. Volunteers looking to plant fruit on a Winchester green patch were forced to cancel after residents claimed they were starting an unauthorised allotment. The Greening Full Flood group was branded totalitarian by one man in Poets Estate after trying to put in communal peach and plum hedges without consulting neighbours. Ernest Jones of Byron Avenue said the hedges could destabilise garden walls and lead to rat and wasp infestations. He claimed Winchester City Council did not give permission, adding, "Why have we not been consulted? Who are these people? They are unaccountable. They are not qualified. They are not representative. They are trying to set up an unofficial allotment. It all seemed most irregular and totalitarian. The council, which has confirmed its support, will now find Greening Full Flood new land for planting." Organiser Eleanor Waterhouse of Elm Road said three or four objectors had overshadowed local enthusiasm after leaflets were posted advertising the event. She said, "After Silver Hill and problems with non-consultation, that people said they weren't consulted, I'm sure the council is feeling rather raw and very keen to be seen to be consulting, but we're not changing anything. The people who complained didn't really understand what we were doing and were not really interested in finding out, to be honest."
300 homes left without power. More than 1,000 villagers were left without electricity in Hampshire last Wednesday. Around 300 homes were out for several hours in Wickham, Shedfield, Knowle and Titchfield, affecting 1,431 residents. Problems started at 8:35 a.m. when a pole-mounted transformer malfunctioned. Samantha O'Connor of Southern Electric Power Distribution said the majority of homes had been reconnected by 3 p.m. She added, "This was due to a fault on a piece of our equipment on the overhead network that our engineers were able to repair quickly."
And that concludes the Hampshire Chronicle extracts for this week. Thank you very much, everyone. A reminder now that the very hard-working and lovely Irene Dowden is the person to call if you have any problems with your recording. Her number again is 01962 870370. 01962 870370. And again, thank you to our editors Gordon and Liz, and to the copying and dispatch and memory stick preparation teams. And finally, many thanks to our readers Claire,
Bye.
Robin.
Bye.
Jerry.
Bye.
And from me, Roz. Will you please put the memory stick in the wallet when you have finished with it and return it to us as soon as possible, putting the address label inside the wallet. Thank you. Have a very good week.